You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In Philadelphia, in a Victorian dining room that overlooks the Delaware River, some of the best minds in homicide investigation have gathered regularly for years to collaborate on solving the toughest cold cases. The Vidocq Society, as it's called, has cracked dozens of age-old mysteries by bringing together forensic artists, FBI agents, and even psychics to form a group that the New York Times called the Heirs of Holmes. Mike Capuzzo takes readers inside some of the Society's cases in his book, The Murder Room, The Heirs of Sherlock Holmes, Gathered to Solve the World's Most Perplexing Cold Cases. He was on our show this past August, along with William Fleischer, a founding member and a commissioner of the Vidocq Society. Listeners told us how much they enjoyed that conversation, and we thought we would play it again for you today. I started off by asking Michael, I understand that forensic scientists and FBI agents would be useful here, but what's a psychic doing in this mix?
Well, the three founders of the Vidocq Society, one of whom you have today, Bill Fleischer, the ex-FBI agent, federal agent, can speak to that too. But Frank Bender is the other founder, who's a famous forensic artist, and he has uncanny abilities. He doesn't like to use the word psychic because it's not a popular one in police departments. But he's had some cases where, well, for instance, the case of John List, who the mass murderer who killed his whole family in New Jersey, and the feds couldn't catch him for 17 years. And then they brought in Frank, America's Wanted, Most Wanted, asked him to do a reconstruction of how List would look 17 years later. And with help from the third founder of the Vidocq Society, Richard Walter, a forensic psychologist who's a real expert, they caught List within 11 days. So there was perhaps some unearthly ability in his ability to discern that stuff.
Bill, how did the three of you put this thing together?
Well, I have known Frank Bender for more than 30 years, and we were friends, and we had lunch often. I'd go by his studio, we'd discuss cases, and one day, and it happened to be on a federal Monday, that's when I was off as a federal employee, and Frank said, hey, I want you to meet this guy, Richard Walter. He's working with me with America's Most Wanted, and I think you two will hit it off. So we met for lunch. And during the lunch, we sat there and we talked about old cases. We talked about things they were working on. It was an intellectual exercise par excellence. And I just said, you know what? This was fun. We ought to do this on a regular basis. And that was the genesis of the Vidocq Society.
And was this in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia in 1990. I believe it was on President's Day. And we were in a restaurant called Day by Day, a very nice restaurant, nothing fancy. And we spent several hours there just talking and enjoying each other's company and discussing different crimes.
And how many members are in the society nowadays?
We have 82 full members, and we have associate members, which we call members special, who can do everything but hold office and vote. And we have right now about 60 of those.
Michael, the members wear a pin decorated with France's colors.
Yes, well, Eugene Francois Vidocq, who was, as I reported in the book, Bill's personal hero as a young FBI agent, was the sort of Napoleonic era founder of forensic science. And I was fascinated by him because he's he brings into reality, into the culture, the idea into the modern world of not only a plainclothes detective and a private eye. He invented both those concepts, but a sort of irrational man or woman who's able to look around dark corners like a Sherlock Holmes type. And in fact, his experience was the role model for the first detective novels.
But he also seems to is said to have inspired characters in Great Expectations and Les Miserables.
Well, one of the fascinating things, and since you have Bill right here, I'll defer to him. But the motivation of Bill. Well, go ahead, Bill. Tell him about Les Miserables.
One of the most.
Where the detective, by the way, is an obsessive and not the hero.
Well, you have both. Les Miserables, which is we all know was written by Victor Hugo. Victor Hugo got the idea from of the whole book from Vidocq, who used to have dinner with quite often, and even complained that, you know, listen, I hate to have dinner with VDOC. His stories are so interesting, I never get to eat. I'm sitting open-mouthed and fascinated by his stories. He, and I like to it hit me immediately because I was a big fan of Les Miserables, the great book, was Jean Valjean and Javert. VDOC, that was the model for both sides of that coin. The intransigent police inspector and the generous and redeemed convict.
So one of the in the VDOC Society, you have these all these facets of the great detective represented. Richard Walter exists to root out and torment evil and is not shy about saying that and takes great pleasure in it. And Bill, who, you know, as you say, was one of the leading federal expert on interrogation and is a tough guy, and more than once in my interviews has broken into tears talking about Les Miserables and the idea of redeeming the bad guys.
Bill, what got you interested in criminology?
Well, I was always enjoyed the idea of being a detective. And I started out as a policeman in Philadelphia in 1968. And it was one job I loved. I loved it because you got, on a day-to-day basis, the ability to help people in a very quick and immediate way. And I enjoyed that, and I always enjoyed that. And then I outsmarted myself. I got my degree, and I went to the FBI. I left the police department, and I always missed it. I still miss it. I missed the excitement of the chase, the ability to do social work. I was a sociology major in college, and we did real social work, the street cop. And I moved on in my career, my whole career was this idea of law enforcement. I might add I have attention deficit disorder as a perfect job because you're always doing something different.
Michael, on most of the television crime dramas, the murder cases are solved within an hour minus time for commercials. But in reality, don't many cases go unsolved, at least initially?
Well, yes, there's some rough estimate of perhaps as many as 100,000 murderers in this country who got away with it. And the VDOC Society exists because of the big heart of Bill and his partners who have seen this tremendous sort of underground of suffering.
Well, Bill, if you people can solve these cases, why couldn't the cops and people like you have solved them in the first place?
That's an excellent question. I'm glad to answer it. It deals with resources. It deals with hard evidence. When I say I can solve a case and our society solves a case, I don't like to use a number. I hate using numbers. I have a sense that we solve 80% of the cases that are presented to us. Now, solving a case doesn't mean you could ever bring it to trial. Mm-hmm. You don't have the evidence. In my view, solving the case means who did it, who most likely did it.
And cops often know that.
Yes.
Even though they can't prove the case.
Yes. But what we bring to the mix, we have some scientific minds. We have medical examiners. We have forensic chemists. We have forensic entomologists, polygraph. I happened to listen to your previous guest about the polygraph, and I would take umbrage to that. Polygraph works. We use all these different ideas of genetics, DNA, fingerprints, and we bring it into the mix. We act as a catalyst, and when we're presented a case at one of our luncheons, it's not uncommon for somebody to raise his hand and said, have you done this?
Well,
we haven't. And they go out and do it, and they wind up making arrests.
And it starts with an armchair detective luncheon over, you know, the fifth course of the VDOC Society, white tablecloth luncheons is a headless body. But after that, in some cases, they go out, in which the book is devoted to, into the field and spend as much as 6 years pro bono hunting down the killer. And to answer your other question, I think there's that scientific approach, DNA. I mean, this group includes leading experts from people who who investigated Martin Luther King's assassination to Robert Ressler, who coined the term profiler, the famous FBI agent that Silence of the Lambs was largely based around. And yet there's also the dark side, the side that that Sherlock Holmes and the living Sherlock Holmes, which is what Bill's partner Richard Walter is known as in Scotland Yard and other places, that can look around the corner beyond the rational, beyond what the DNA says, and assign it meaning. It's sort of like the Dostoevsky factor, I call
it. Bill says that he believes in lie detector tests. There are other people who say that they're untrustworthy. Yeah, in most cases they'll work, but then a sociopath can pass, and we've often seen that happen. You got to know right from wrong. You got to know there are all sorts of tricks, aren't there, that people who are adept at taking the test can know?
Well, Leonard, it's like this. You put a scalpel in the hand of a trained surgeon who has good training, has experience, and natural talent, and he could bring you back from death. Put that same scalpel in the hand of an inexperienced, not untalented, and not too competent surgeon, and it'll kill you. It'll put you in a coma for removing a growth from your nose. I saw that happen.
Well, there's a case in the book. You know, Bill's speaking to, I think, interpretation as part of the science, although it's very scientific. But there's a case in the book where Bill and his colleague at the Vidocq Society, Nate Gordon, are restless, have helped the small-town police department unearth the killer of a young woman who's been hiding out for 10 years or more. And the small-town police department is doing the interrogation. And these two guys are in the hallway saying they feel like fighter jets when the guy in there doing the interrogation is, you know, on a horseback. And they go in there with the aid of, as an investigative tool, a tool of intimidation and science. They go in and bust this guy wide open and get him to confess to this killing, partly with the aid of lie detection and partly with the great skill of people who have spent years with their own intuition and knowledge.
My guests are Michael Capuzzo, whose latest book is The Murder Room, The Heirs of Sherlock Holmes Gathered to Solve the World's Most Perplexing Cold Cases. It's published by Gotham. And William Fleischer, one of the three founding members of the Vidocq Society, the group that solves these cases. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So who brings these cases to the Vidocq Society? Are they mostly representatives of police departments?
We get a lot of our cases from police departments, sometimes the prosecutors. I would say the majority of the cases are directed to us through family members. And a lot of times, in fact, we have a protocol. We won't accept a case that is brought to us by somebody who doesn't have standing, a family member, law enforcement, or the prosecutor.
Well, could you talk about the case, a civilian who got a chance to address the society, a man named Antoine Le Havre?
That was the individual who stood up before the society, and I think, you know, claimed there. When I say I think there are differences of opinions among the partners here. This is a flawed, heroic group, like everybody, you know. And remember, Bill, this is the one where Frank.
I know exactly what.
Yeah,
it is,
yeah.
And Hoff is a pseudonym, obviously.
Yeah, right. The only pseudonym in the book, because he was never charged with a crime. But Bill's two partners, he brought the crime to the Vidocq Society, and he was a family member, and he said, "I need your help. You know, I've been not a family member, he was a friend of the murder victim, and he had spent a lot of money and time himself looking to find the killer. So he was going to these great detectives, and he made his presentation. And at the end of it, Frank Bender, who is the, might we say, intuitive artist, stood up and said, "I know who killed, you know, Mr. X. For my money, you're the killer," and pointed at him.
And why would he have done this, put himself in this vulnerable position?
Well, then Richard Walter, the forensic psychologist profiler, stood up and basically said, and this is how Richard talks, "Yes, indeed, my blunt-spoken friend." They are kind of rivals and opposites. He said, "My blunt-spoken friend is quite right. You, sir, are the lead suspect, if not a psychopath." And Richard's diagnosis was that this is the kind of, based on the study of the crime, the kind of killer that it's jollies to fool a room full of cops. Bill might have a different opinion.
For my money, they're both wrong. I don't think this man is the killer. But we agree on a lot. We, you know, honest men can disagree. And we disagree a lot. But that doesn't, that's probably a good factor for what we do. We bounce all ideas off the police that are presenting the case. And you get a better sense and assessment of what the facts are. It leads you to the proof, the evidence.
If I were a true crime novelist, I probably would want to attend a lot of the meetings because it sounds like most of these cases are really fascinating. And in a couple of cases, we have seen the equivalent of perfect crimes, haven't we?
Well, they are fascinating. They've actually showed up. The Vidocq Society has showed up everything from Law and Order to Nancy Drew.
Do you have any Bobbsey Twins and Baby May cases?
We're thinking about finding some. No, all our cases are fascinating, interesting. I never want to get to that's another power assertive murder. You know, where it becomes blasé. It's not. It's very serious business. But I must confess, when we first came up with the concept, it was more as an intellectual exercise and fun to get the concept, to get all your friends who were in the forensic game together over lunch, the purpose to look at an old case, but the real reason, have a good meal and have a bone home.
And then
and that was the original concept.
Then one of Bill's colleagues at the Philadelphia Police Department, you know, the Springsteen song Atlantic City, where they blew up the Chicken Man last night, which was Phil Testa, and it was a real crime where, you know, he opened the door of his little row house and was blown to smithereens. Well, one of Bill's colleagues, a great guy on a murder, Frank Friel, was the cop who went to the hospital and lifted to the dying Don, and from his respirating chest and his final breaths, took the picture of Harry the Hunchback Rickabeen, who was the hitman, off the chest. Anyway, this guy, and it was a great murder investigator, went to a conference that I went to that the Vidocq Society's been partnering with or working
and
with.
And ironically, of, we're going
parents.
Parents
of Murdered, right. Yeah, Parents of Murdered Children, which is, I'm in this ballroom in Cincinnati, and it's the annual convention of this group that has 100,000 members, and you're sitting there, and there's, you know, 10,000 people in the ballroom, and every single one of them has had a child who was murdered.
Oh, my. Yeah. You want to add to that, Bill?
Yeah, they're having their convention this Friday here in Philadelphia, and we're participating, the Vidocq Society, are having two panels. It's sort of to give guidance, information, thoughts, and we're calling it partnering up for solving crimes. How you have to partner up with the family, the press, the police, the prosecutor. And what was poignant about this, Frank came back from this convention that he went out to speak on behalf of the Vidocq Society. And this is a tough, hardened homicide commander. And he said, I was moved at points I couldn't talk. These people that came up with me and the displays outside, the pictures of all these children and young people and friends and brothers and sons and daughters. He says, we have to think about changing our direction to really helping, not just having a good lunch and entertaining ourselves. And I said, let's go for it. And since then, we put on pro bono homicide cold case seminars all over the country for homicide detectives. We bring in some of the biggest experts in the field to speak and talk.
And put a bunch of people behind bars, which is the, you know, when they get out.
And you say that this is sacred work, but let's talk about putting people behind bars.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier that the 80% of the cases are cracked at the meetings, but that hasn't led to convictions in every case. What percentage have wound up
people
in jail?
I can't give you a percentage, but I'll say more than 20 cases have been solved and resulted in arrests.
For example, there was this young man, handsome young man, sort of looked like a taller blonde Tom Cruise, and he moved to Texas to try to remake his life. He was in his 20s and moved in with a woman who kind of an attractive, dark-haired young woman. They're both in their 20s, and ended up disappeared with his blood all over the walls, horribly killed, tortured, mutilated, etc. And for 6 years or more, the police couldn't even conceive that this young woman would have had a role in it. And Bill got involved in Frank Friel, and they figured out that this was a Richard Walter case, too. Bill assigns people. And Bill is like, I think of Bill as like Charlie of Charlie's Angels or Q sometimes, as well as being involved in the cases himself. And Richard met in Philadelphia with the grieving father, who had been a very successful businessman who had been trying to be his own detective until he saw the Vidocq Society on 48 Hours and said, maybe these men and women can help. And finally, Richard said to him, the father said, Mr. Walter, do you think you can help me find the killer of my son? And Richard said, and this is how he talks, as Bill will attest, Mr. Dunn, aren't you tired of being the grieving father? And he said, well, I thought that's what I was supposed to do. And he said, no. He said, you should be mad as hell. The bleep killed your son. Let's go get the bleep. You know, so that's the kind of passion all these people have. And
you're
they
bleeping
got
because he used a word that we can't say on the
yeah.
air.
But no,
it was
a young woman.
We
yeah.
can't use on the radio.
It was a young woman, and it took.
Had she killed other people?
No, but she. Richard was able to do this profile, and Richard put 6,000 hours in with his Vidocq colleagues for 6 years. And was able to, well, she's now in jail serving 20 years for murder. They got two murder convictions on that. And one of the first, if not the first, cases in the state of Texas where there was a conviction without a body. There was no body. And the Vidocq Society called upon Scotland Yard in one particularly sort of dramatic moment where the DA said, you don't have a case here. There's no body. But, of course, there was enough blood all over the room that a 190-pound man could never have survived. And analysis from Scotland Yard came back and said the blood is the body.
The building that houses the murder room is where the Founding Fathers dined during the Constitutional Convention. How did you acquire that space, Bill?
Well, initially, that's where we used to meet. We used to meet at City Tavern, and we met there for years. And at some point, the Park Service closed it down, so we moved to another historic location, the Downtown Club in Philadelphia. Very former stodgy men's club of many years' time. In the heyday of Philadelphia publications, it was in the Public Ledger building, an old newspaper in Philadelphia. But we got that case. I sorted out. My whole concept of the Vidocq Society was to let the world know who Vidocq was. And ironically, Vidocq, when he was a young man and started out his life a crime, was heading to Philadelphia. And I envisioned him actually being in Philadelphia at the City Tavern. And I went out and I arranged that we could have our meetings there.
Bill started his life not in a life of crime, but in a life of some perhaps juvenile activities that his parents would frown upon. So I think the story of redemption runs deep in.
Absolutely.
Although that's not uncommon for cops, is it?
No, it's not.
Now, you're still meeting every month?
We were meeting 12 months a year, but we in the last 2 years, we knocked off to 9 times a year. Uh-huh. We gave the summer months off, July and August and December, because December with the Christmas parties and, you know, the hustle bustle of the season, it was just we were getting low attendance to our meetings and
are meetings open to the general public?
You have to be invited. You're a member, you can bring a guest. As long as he's not a homicidal maniac, he's welcome or she's welcome.
Michael, you're perhaps best known for writing Close to the Shore about the real-life event that inspired Peter Benchley's novel Jaws and Steven Spielberg's film adaptation of it. How did you go from that to writing about criminology?
Well, thanks, Leonard. In retrospect, I thought I was obviously somehow going from a shark serial killer to the real thing, but I didn't know that at the time. I found them on the internet. I was interested in criminology, and I found a website that said Cuisine and Crime. Mm-hmm. And I read about Bill and Frank and Richard, and I thought this would be a wonderful book. I also had the desire, after writing a historical thriller set in 1916, to write a book where everyone was living, and I could talk to them all. And, of course, the everyone was living part didn't quite work out.
And, Bill, you're retired?
No.
Oh, you're still working for the FBI?
I was retired when I worked for the government. I retired from the government in 96, and I've been working hard ever since with a private detective agency I have in Philadelphia, Keystone Intelligence Network, and also doing polygraph training with the Academy of Scientific Investigative Training, which is also it's a subsidiary of Keystone Intelligence here in Philadelphia. So I've been working very hard since I retired. And in retrospect, maybe I wouldn't have retired so soon.
I don't know if I ever have to take a lie detector test, whether it would be a good idea to have you administer it or whether it would be a bad idea. But
it depends whether or not you're telling the truth.
William Fleischer is a founding member of the Vidocq Society, which is the subject of Michael Capuzzo's new book. Michael is the author of the New York Times bestseller Close to Shore, former writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer and Miami Herald, whose work has also appeared in Esquire, Sports Illustrated, Reader's Digest, and other publications. His new book, The Murder Room, The Heirs of Sherlock Holmes Gathered to Solve the World's Most Perplexing Cold Cases, it's published by Gotham Books. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you, Leonard.